Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome back to Thick Radio, the podcast where we talk about gaining, feedism, and everything in their orbit. I'm James.
And I'm Tim. So let's get into it. Today we're welcoming to the show for the first time. Today we've got Michael.
Hello, hello. Thank you, guys. I'm so excited.
Good. How are you today, Michael?
Yeah, I'm good. It's a Sunday morning in London time, and it's just beautiful weather, so I feel beautiful inside.
It is. As a fellow Australian who is also in London, I was very pleased to wake up this morning to not torrential downpour, since I am possibly going out to meet again a friend this afternoon. So, you know, fingers and toes crossed we don't get fucking drowned rats in the deluge. Timbo, what's it like over there?
It's it's 6 a.m. here. The sun has not come up yet. So I'm a little frazzled because I sort of bolted out of bed about 20 minutes ago because my alarm didn't go off.
Bless you, babe. Well, now you know what it's like to be me. There was that one time that we did a bunch of recordings and it was like, what, 2-3 o'clock in the morning for me? And you were like, James, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. We do this for the art. Shut up and
Was that back when we were doing chunks we like to watch and we had to like watch 5 movies in a row or something?
Oh God, it was something like that. Something insane. And you're the only person looking out for me. I was not looking out for my well-being at that point. I will just out myself there. I was like, no, we will do this and it will be fine. And I'm okay. Why can I smell color? Like, you know, that level of exhaustion when nothing makes sense anymore. But we will push on today and it will be fabulous because, Michael, we're so glad to have you on the program because, you know, this is, of course, adhering to the typical series that we like to do where we interview creators of what we're kind of referencing as like akin content, right? Like, it's not necessarily about gaining or focused on our community, but the kind of themes and tones are relatively in the same kind of a ballpark. So to kick that conversation off, Michael, why don't you tell us and our listeners about BDSM Reimagined?
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, BDSM Reimagined is a project that myself and Indy, who couldn't make it today, she and I decided to record and document our journey into kink and BDSM. So we were just looking at it from the perspective of psychology, because she herself has been doing psychology for about 18 years now, and I've been practicing kink for, decades. And we just thought, you know what, let's record, because she herself lives in Sydney. So as you say, I'm also Australian originally. So she's in Sydney, I'm in London. And we're so used to doing voice record messaging. I don't know if you do it. And we just like send voice messages over WhatsApp. And because we're so used to that format, we thought, wait a minute, there's an opportunity here to record our own exploration into kink and make it as a podcast for people to listen to. So it's been wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
That's awesome stuff. So, I mean, to kind of frame you a little bit within the context for the listeners, if I can inquire, what kind of kinks do you currently partake in, find an interest in, and how long have you been partaking?
Yeah. So I've always identified as submissive. And Indy is a dominatrix. So her sexual exploration only happened about 4 years ago when she had a separation with her husband. And then she had this huge response to that and she became this like tyrannical dominatrix type of persona. And that's why we decided to record so we can capture that. But as far as my own kink journey, I've always felt submissive. So that's the primary thing. There's two things. The first is I've loved trainers. Or shoes or sneakers, if we're in the American audience. Absolutely love them as a child. People have a common kink is feet. I'm much more into trainers itself. So that's the primary one. And then in my later teenage years, early 20s, it definitely turned towards a submissive temperament. And then when I moved to London at 26, that's when I fully gave myself permission to explore that position. Interestingly enough, is that I've actually done more domination than anything else.
I don't know if that's that odd, because it almost fits with that theme where it's like for me myself, I am just desperately attracted to any beautiful brown man who is somewhat Latin, Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, Turkish. I'll visualize them and I go, that is the perfect man. The type of men that I've almost exclusively dated, white British looking dudes. I don't know why. That's just who I seem to wind up dating. Does not seem to at all align with the type of gentleman that I somehow would normally picture myself with. So I feel like there is a commonality thread there of like, what you might appreciate might not always manifest definitely with what you do.
A common complaint I hear in Cleveland in the gay community is that there's not enough tops. Mm. Like, and it seems, I'm like, I guess this really is a universal problem if somebody on the other side of the planet is saying something similar.
I mean, I want to swap. I want to get the British, white, kind of pasty kind of guy. And by all I'm getting is the dark Mediterranean. I'm like, oh no, why?
Well, it's like when I first moved to London, I did also think to myself, you know, you've got to sample the local cuisine. That is why I am here. Demands an expectation that one might enjoy something like that. But then, you know, being in a poly-open relationship is fabulous because then it kind of means, oh, we don't need to worry about all that. We can all go out and have a good time and nothing needs to be, you know, how's your father? Yeah. But I enjoy getting to have these types of conversations, right? Because I think this is obviously what your podcast comes down to. It is exploring what it means to be a kinkster and all the different ways that that could really intersect with our lives. I think some of us are very, very quick to say, oh, you're into a certain type of kink. I could never fuck with that. I could never, you know, connect with that. And it's like, well, actually, you'd be surprised. Like, not saying you have to open yourself to it or engage with it fully, but I'm sure, for example, you being submissive, I'm sure there are many ways where someone could like scratch that itch in a sense without having to like fully take it all the way there in the bedroom. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, for me, it became quite limiting. I became quite obsessive about the submissive identity. I want to be like a 24/7 slave, which is absolutely fine. People choose that direction and I really support it. I'm always for awareness and conscious kink. So kind of scratch a bit deep into why you're interested in that, but go for it. But for me, it became very, very kind of obsessive and very limiting. And it wasn't completely accurate. Depending on the person I met, I actually did feel like I wanted to top. Or I did, and I'm not making sub synonymous with bottoming, not at all. But I did feel like, oh, actually, I could see that there's a sort of kind of hierarchy between me and you, and I maybe we can embellish on me being more dominant, and that's genuine. So I kind of lent on that in the past 4 or 5 years.
I really appreciate that. You know, that again, conversation topics that I think people say this, right? They're like, bottom and top is not the same as dom and sub, and like we know that, but how often do people have that conversation, right? Like there's still so much expectation and inference, like yeah you can have all these different things, but actually we're going to do the same old. So it is nice to hear people who kind of break from that mold in a sense. I mean, Tim, you yourself are someone who's done quite a bit of kink over the years, I know, with that focus on leather, but
yeah,
do you feel a resonance with this conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of people who, over the years, being a leather man, sometimes you'll see new people come in to the community and they kind of throw themselves into it with total abandon. It's like all of a sudden they're willing to try everything under the sun as they try to suss out, okay, what am I into? What am I not into? I approached it from the point of view of, I know there are certain limits that I have, and that's what's always sort of like kept me out of certain play scenes. But I don't think that I developed the kind of I don't want to say obsession. I want to come up with like a better euphemism than that. But like the focus, like I was never really as focused on some things as other people. What my doorway in was pup play. And I've kind of shied away from that in recent years. It's not that I don't enjoy doing it. It's just that I feel like I've kind of outgrown it. I feel like I would really love to be trained as a sir, but where I live, it's kind of hard to find a sir that is available and one that I trust to actually train me to be a sir as well. So I'm kind of stalled there at the moment. But what was the original question?
Well, I was sort of querying, you know, how you're feeling with a lot of this dialogue as someone who, you know, has engaged with a lot of kink in different communities over the years. And I think something this makes me consider to maybe query with the impetus? Yes, the beginning of the impetus of BDSM reimagined, you know, Tim's framing of it's very difficult to find people to train him to be a sir. And so often you find that in these locales, don't know why, there's a lot of bottoms or a lot of tops or a lot of people into one specific thing. An area becomes a mecca for a fascination for some reason. I don't know why in particular, but perhaps the fact that there is a lot of missed opportunity for a lot of people within different kink spaces, you know, is that maybe part of that impetus behind BDSM Reimagined, a chance to explore those things, have conversations that maybe provide a framework of access for people who might be missing out on that?
Yeah, I think that's particularly highlighted through the rambles section of the show. So throughout this show, we have serious conversations about kink, where it comes from, you know, why is it in a particular sexual fantasy? Why are you interested in this in leather? Or why is it a Nike trainer and not an Adidas one? And why do you, I mean, we interviewed this guy in season 4 who was interested in being kidnapped. And in his most arousing fantasy, he speaks about having a particular masking tape. It had to be that one. It couldn't be a blue one. It had to be this one. And it had to be a white van that looked like this. And Indy and myself loved to explore upbringing and early childhood to see what kind of connections we can make towards that. But part of the ramble section in what we were talking about just momentarily is we document our own journey and struggle through sexual identity and stereotypes. And one of the ones, you know, I suffer a lot with is I kind of identify as a sub top, which is very confusing. And because I prefer to top generally, but I always say I'm submissive. So it does fall into that, well, if you're submissive, shouldn't you be bottoming, etc.? And that new label coming on Grindr and dating apps as side, that's like, oh, wait, maybe I'm a side, but that's not true as well, because I also like to do anal stuff, but it's not important. So the BDSM Reimagined does document that as well, that side of things and how we work through that.
That's awesome. And, you know, what I love is this kind of cross-blending of ideas. You know, the existence of demisexuals really, I think, promotes the notion of demiromanticism and also demi-fascinations. You know, like, I am someone who identifies as a side because do I crave to penetrate or be penetrated for the most part? Not really, but there are times when I want that. There are certainly times when I want that. So for me, it's almost like there's a demi side, or I'm a demi bottom or a demi top, you know, where it's like I want different things at different times and with different people and in different situations. I love that there's this language that's evolving, and I love that, as you express, like through your rambles, that there is that opportunity to really explore that. And I want to point to something here as well. You mentioned when you were talking to this guest on season 4 about their bondage kink and how the ultimate fantasy was so specific, and how, you know, you express that the goal through your episodes is not to be so clinical about it necessarily, but to really ask those questions, to kind of dig through, like, is there something here? Like, is there an answer, or at least a route to where these fascinations come from? And I'm curious, was that a specific intention with the podcast?
Yeah, because we kind of work on the premise that in our podcast that everything has meaning. All our ideas and sexual fantasies, there's a meaning behind it and there's a reason behind it. And it's not pathologizing as in we need to then get rid of that or therefore it's wrong. It's just, let's have a look at why is it your specific fantasy has these certain conditions. And we did about 8 or 9 guests with quite extreme kinks. And, you know, my God, there were clear links that led back to upbringing or moments in childhood that we just found very fascinating. And guests found quite freeing in a sense. Just, it didn't change their behavior. It didn't make them stop or anything. It was just, it kind of complemented their sexuality in a sense. And like, oh, wow, this is a real part of me, which is trying to connect. And that's fantastic.
Like a sexual 23andMe.
Yeah.
Like, you find out, oh, I've got this little something happening in the background. Oh, how fun. I'll trot that out at parties. It'll have no major impact.
Yeah, and how many times have we said that kinks are woven into the fabric of your sexual identity? I mean, you really can't divorce yourself from them. You try. Plenty of people try to suppress them, but they always come back.
I did. I had a big journey with that. Really? When I was 26, I moved to London. I was like, I'm definitely interested in chavs, the whole chav kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And being degraded and humiliated. And that still lives there. But I went to therapy and I was just like, let's try find the root of this. And is there a wound I need to heal? And in some ways there was, but now I'm just like, I'm embracing it and I feel I'm in control of it. And it's fantastic. Well, yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's accept a sense it. Ownership, I think, and this is very common with gaining. Like, there's a lot of people who yo-yo diet, or a lot of people who jump in, throw themselves in 100%, and then the first instance of having been challenged, like, why do you do this? Why do you feel like this? They skipper away into the shadows. And look, I think many of us have experienced that. There's no judgment, no shade to any listeners. But I think what's almost edifying about your journey is that this is a common thread for all kinksters. And so there's almost this necessity for us all to really address this is almost like step one with your kink. Like, once the dick is out of your hand and you've come and you've wiped yourself up and cleaned yourself off and you're looking in the mirror and you're having that moment of panic, deep breath in, deep breath out, you're okay. You're not a bad person.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think they call that post-coital panic. When you when you've come really hard from like your fantasy being either fulfilled or you're just having a really intense goon, and then immediately afterwards you feel like, oh my god, I'm a freak, there's something wrong with me, I need to never indulge in this again. Like, I'm glad that I got over that quickly.
Yeah, you just got to lean in and go, well, this is a reflection of me, and this is just something to get into. But to bring it back around to BDSM reimagined for a moment here, and I like that this I almost sense like this is where the reimagined part comes from, right? Like, it's not trying to pathologize, it's not trying to explain it away or get rid of things. It's more just trying to find a way to open up, explore it, and, you know, develop a sense of acceptance for people who may not have already had that. So I appreciate that framing. And I think something that kind of makes me think on is, and how very typically in kink spaces, there is a huge delineation between men and women or straight and queer. This point that no one seems to want to address, which is, oh yeah, you can all be friends in a kink space because you all share the same kind of desires, and yet queer men only want to hang out with queer men and not women. Why? If you're just making friends, there's realistically no issue. This unspoken thing of wanting to cultivate a network where everyone has some potential of fuckability, and it's like, that's probably why some people are not processing their sexuality appropriately, because they're trying to firmly combine it all. And it's like, no, like Tim and I, for example, you know, like, we are both gay men, we are both gainers, our kinks and sexual positions theoretically align, but this is someone I see as a brother. This is not someone I would ever want to actually mix any kind of sex.
And yet people still ask us when we're gonna smash. I'm like, it's not gonna happen, guys.
Yeah.
He's five.
Yeah, and it's almost like you always see those pairings, like the Trixie and Katya, and people write like fanfics of them fucking, and you just imagine what it must be like to be them, and someone's written a fiction and you're just like,
oh no, girl, I'm waiting for that day. I swear to god, if anyone ever writes any fanfiction about you and me, we are getting on Zoom immediately. We're popping some popcorn and we're reading it together.
Yes. We would absolutely have to. Terrifying. But also just because, like, Well, I assume, that's the question. Like, are people going to presume you've said on the podcast you're a top, but like, are people going to presume you're the top and therefore on the bottom? Or are they going to assume there's like a fight? Like, that'll be interesting. Like, with the details of our sexual selves that we have not disclosed. I say that as if we probably haven't disclosed everything at this stage.
We have. We have.
But presuming there's gaps in the narrative, it'll be interesting to see where people fill in those gaps and make the story work, if it works at all.
And I wonder where I fit in all of this. I'm joking.
Absolutely. Michael is the sexy third, the pizza delivery boy. But only if you do it in like the really deadpan, like unimpressed actor way, where it's like, hey, here's your pizza. Wow, yeah. You can't afford to pay?
What are we... not making eye contact at all.
You've thought about this one, okay.
No, do you know what? I always think, I showed this to Tim, there's this hilarious one that you can see on YouTube. It's a student-teacher one, and the teacher is just doing too much, and the student is not doing nearly enough. He's like, Mr. Cox, I can't fail this class. I just can't. And then Mr. Cox, the teacher, is like, well, if you have a good reason for not standing up in front of the class, I could excuse it. Is it polio? Like fucking polio, like what?
He should have pulled out something even older, but like, what is it, diphtheria?
I think one more thing to say about the cousin thing is just like, I think I want to also normalize it, the whole conversation. Like, I'm so open to having these conversations with everyone, and I don't want to have to hide parts of myself with particular people and members of the family, you know? The fact that we can just talk about it and say, hey, this is what you're into, this is what I'm into, that's it. Like, no judgment. Let's just talk about it. Why am I hiding this from people that I love and you know, care for?
That's a really good point. And I think there's this huge conversation. We did an episode called Coming Out of the Pantry, which is what we call it when we talk about our gaining desires. But there's a huge discussion in the community space about whether or not you should come out to friends or family. I think the decision is basically up to the individual. If you think it's relevant to you, if you want to do that, go and do it. But I do think that openness breeds acceptance because, not to be that person who relies on the paraphrasing or anything like that, but like what is in the dark shall come to light, what is in the shadow shall... you know, fester and rot and what... Like, it's very that, when you are open about things... it cannot be misconstrued. It can only be owned and accepted for what it is. So I think that's wonderful that you have that approach. And I wonder how many people have a similar experience of sharing things with family. And people do say that kink is apparently a genetic thing. Like, it's passed down. I don't know where it comes from or how it metastasizes, but I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. I do want to ask quickly, from your perspective, what has response been like from listeners for your podcast?
So we've had quite a lot of guests throughout the seasons, and they've really enjoyed the process of just talking through their kinks and fetishes, which has been really good. We've had responses from actually surprisingly a lot of the elder demographic, and they've come for... There was a 70-odd... male who emailed recently just saying he listens to the podcast while eating dinner, which I just thought was lovely. And that he identifies with a lot of the content around BDSM and love and where does, how does it play a role in that. But there's just random people from around the place. We don't get much response at all in saying that, but yeah, there are a few here. But mainly it's kind of like no news is good news. That's how we're taking it.
Yeah, we're a bit of the same. I mean, Tim, you've commented on this recently.
We are starting to get some response on the Apple podcast page, but occasionally I'll get messages on various platforms that, you know, people are saying, oh, I love the podcast, thank you for creating it, but it's not as if it's an overwhelming response. You know, we kind of just look at our stats and we see that they're slowly increasing, so it's kind of like, again, no news is good news. Like, we can see reflected in the data that the podcast is slowly growing. And that's kind of like that's what we have to take. It's like, okay, I guess we're doing something right.
Exactly. This is your moment, everyone. Go to your respective podcast page. Go to Thick Radio. Give us 5 stars and write us a review. Separate things. Make it lovely, please. And then go to BDSM Reimagined. Do the same lovely thing for them because they're lovely. There you go. That's that little plug. Obviously, we'll do all this at the end, but, you know. Listeners, do the thing, dang it. Please.
It really goes a long way. It does. Like, ratings in this industry is like, whew.
It's everything.
It goes a long way. It's so quick and simple, but it really does. Like,
the point that I've made to a few people, and again, we'll segue here a moment. Like, the reason why these things are important is not just because it's like, oh, it's popularity, like, so that you're more popular than others. Like, yeah, sure, cool. But also, that's how SEO works, right? Search engine optimization. The more people are commenting, liking, engaging with your content, the more easy it is to find because it'll appear sooner and sooner on the Google pages. And if you do that, then people who are out there and actually looking for this content, BDSM related stuff, gaming related stuff will actually find it. You know, it amazes me still to this day, because we've been doing this for as long as we have now, that there are still people who follow me on Instagram, and they've been following me for a while, had no idea about this podcast. And I'm sat here like, I'm sure I talk about this every day of my life. People still don't know. People don't know. And people don't necessarily look unless people tell them to look. People also don't get recommended it unless it gets enough comments and 5-star ratings that it then gets recommended to people who show similar interests. So it actually does help, not just for the sake of the product, but for the people who might actually be looking for something like this. It's a huge help. So this is your call out. Go do the thing. And thank you in advance for that, dear listeners. Right, so on that point, mentioning gaining, of course, this is a gaining podcast. I don't believe you guys have had a guest on to talk about gaining or specifically, like, larger body attraction in the past, have you?
We had one guest, Michael's Macro. He was into macrophilia, but part of... So, no, we haven't. We haven't had a specific guest on that topic. So you're always welcome. But he was very interested in... He was very interested in large men and the large giant eating more and more to gain weight. And then he wanted to be consumed by a man as well. But no, and that's not, and the thing about kink is that it's close, but it's not good enough in a sense. Like, there's a specific kink demographic who's interested in gaining and microphilia.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting to consider the way that people visualize kink, you know, that there's almost like this top-down category idea, right? That things fit under other things. Whereas I look at more the Catherine Gates map of kink and sexuality, if you've ever seen it.
No.
I will find you a link after this. It's pretty fabulous. But I look at it more like there's this amorphous map of different points that are kind of vaguely connected to each other. And then I think what we are... is a series of raindrops on the water. And so it's a ripple effect. Where the drop touches, that's kind of the center point, and then things ripple outwards, because you often find that people will have the main kink, and then there are sort of the surrounding elements, like, oh, I can kind of appreciate this, or, oh, I see how that's related, outwards and outwards. Yeah. So I think it's interesting to kind of conceive how people consider their kinks. But what I want to ask you is, having not had the opportunity to interview a gainer necessarily in the past, what is your understanding of gaining and feedism? Have you encountered gainers or feeders either on the apps or in person or online before? What's your take on it? Curious to hear.
I've not actually seen it a lot, especially in the apps, etc. It's not there. I think there's an obsession, particularly with dating apps, on body image. And the body image is, of course, that typical slender masculine. And anything otherwise is frowned upon or discarded of. So I definitely can see that. What I do know is when I was on Twitter, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I could see some of the feeds were of men holding their bellies, you know, and about to eat a huge Subway or a huge pizza. And that's the only exposure I've had to this particular fetish. And I think that's that says something, because it's a bit of a blind spot. When I brought up with Indy, I was thinking there's gainers and feeders. And then she herself was very like, wow, I've never heard of that. And then what she did was really interesting. She then, as a psychologist, she then said this is a whole different way of thinking about body image and people who have eating disorders, because she's treated a lot of eating disorders. And she said that this is kind of making her rethink the whole eating disorder framework and why people are doing it, etc. So she was very curious to know more about this particular fetish. But no, I don't see much exposure.
I mean, Tim, again... Our elder statesman here. I mean, in your experience, why do you think that even to this day, that there might be such a division, that there are people who either know all about it and are very invested in it, or the sharp sort of yeeting off the cliff to the point of have never heard about it, don't know the first thing about it?
I'd imagine that most people have never heard of it because of the way society is structured and the view of overweight people in society. I mean, it's a negative viewpoint, even with the body positivity movement, even with celebrities that are okay with their weight where it is. Like, it's still a society that is obsessed with the idea of being fit, being trim, being beautiful. You know, it's on the cover of every magazine, it's in every movie, it's in every advertisement, it's in every TV show. And when you see a larger person on the cover of a magazine embracing their weight, it's like a one-off kind of thing. It's like, you don't see it that often. Like, I think when they put that one plus size model on the cover of Vogue, it sparked like just, you know, this global like argument about, is this healthy? Is this not healthy? She's not a healthy person. Why is she on, like, you know, all that bullshit. Like, we don't have to get into it, but, and then the people who do know about it are the people who have sought it out intentionally. I went looking for it. You went looking for it, you know, and that's how we had to find it, is we had to kind of scour the internet back in the day to find it. It's a little bit easier now, but it's still kind of relegated to this little shadowy corner of the net.
And in comparison, obviously, where we try to bring it more to the fore, and kind of what I was inferring before with what is in the light can only be accepted for what it is. You know, I think that's really the intent, to kind of say, if it's not in the shadows, can't make up bullshit about it. You know, unfortunately, that's been a big proponent of the public persona around gaining in feedism. And we've covered this a lot in a lot of our review episodes, a lot of documentaries, films, anything that really references specifically gaining or feedism. It's salacious, it's negative, it paints it as this like non-con horror show of
horrendous. That we all have eating disorders, that we are all mentally unstable, that we have some kind of trauma that we never dealt with. You know, which I feel like you can, I feel like people would say that about anyone who's involved in a kink of some kind. Like someone who doesn't want to admit that they have kinks or believes that they don't have them at all, judging someone who does and being like, well, you must have had a really fucked up childhood, or you must have had something happen to you that you never dealt with. You know, God forbid that people just indulge in a fantasy in a healthy way, you know, that's not going to leave, you know, like, how can I put this? Like, it isn't going to leave them in some battered state afterwards. Like, God forbid that people just embrace that they're into a certain thing, and as long as they're doing it with another consenting adult or doing it totally on their own, not involving anybody at all, and it's just them in their head and enjoying these fantasies, there's nothing wrong with that. But people treat it like, oh, you must be damaged, you must be deficient if this is the kind of thing that makes you happy.
We're taught not to look at larger demographics, larger people. It's all just look at the skinny, thin. And the moment, you know, our eyes capture anything large, it's, yeah, it equals unhealthy, unattractive, look away. But actually, what I hear you're saying is that, no, there's people there who's like, no, I love this, I own this, it's part of me. I don't want to go into a skinnier framework, not at all.
Yeah.
And that's a shame that we don't hear that side. Such a shame.
It's interesting. I've been reading a piece called Feederism, written back in 2015 by Kathy Charles and Michael Pakowski. It's really interesting because it's probably one of the most thorough pieces that really explores what has come before and what is the reality. And when it's assessing what comes before, a lot of that prior research indicates this idea that it is expected that gaining in feedism could only ever be non-consensual, because it operates from this idea of, like, why could someone possibly want to be fat? They must have a mental disorder in order to want this. Or they've had so many eating disorders over the course of their life, they just found a way to sexualize it to not want to hate themselves, which is such a bleak view of human existence. Like, no, that's not it at all. And it also addresses the fact that the majority of any qualitative research that's been done focuses almost purely on the heterosexual side of things, which does follow a typical narrative, again, purported from the outside looking in, of weak-minded idiot women who have no self-worth and so partner themselves with thin, skeevy, greasy, disgusting men who want to feed and fat them up until they kill them. And that this is the only narrative that exists. So as a gay gainer, I'm like, wow, that's both transphobic, sexist, and homophobic, because I just don't exist, and I'm apparently worth nothing. So, you know, it's very important, again, why we have these conversations. It's to make people aware of the reality. Like, no, you're not going to take my narrative from me. I will speak my narrative. And the narrative is, I am in control. I consent to this at every moment of my day. I talk about this publicly because this is my truth. And if you have anything to say, you can email me at thethickradio@gmail.com and I will let you know good and goddamn well where we sit on the matter. Thank you very much. But I imagine that there is an element like this as well with BDSM Reimagined, not necessarily out here to provoke or to, you know, look for the negativity, so to say, but I would imagine there's an element of creating this program for the sake of others and for the sake of yourself creates a space in which you can know authentically that this and everything that goes on is safe and is fine, because yeah. there's so little in the world, even as we move into a more kink positive space, that actually holds kink positiveness as a good thing.
It's like, why are we shaming ourselves endlessly that when we think about our experience in our life, it's actually just something to celebrate and to have so much fun with these parts of ourselves. It's a real human animalistic nature. It's a real part of our deep psyche. And when you can finally express that with a person, with another person, you really connect. And I think it's a deep bond when you share these kinks and these behaviors that are otherwise so shamed by society and ourselves. We've been taught to shame that. So definitely our podcast really seeks out to say, this is all normal. It's all absolutely fine. There's nothing to worry about. And it's actually fascinating and beautiful when you accept it. And we do it through a lens of exploration on ourselves. Like when we see, oh, this is why I'm interested in chavs. Like, well, this is why I want to worship or be an object. Oh, wow, that's incredible. And someone is going to actually let me do that. And that is a deep bond.
Well, sometimes I wonder, so like, because I have a similar fascination with what we would consider white trash over here. and I often wonder if it's like somewhere locked deep in the genetic code, because if you think of a queer man having the brain of, say, like a heterosexual cisgendered woman, you know, it's like you would see this man as a hunter, as like the one who goes out to kill the prey, as the one who can protect you, as the one who can go to war while you know, and I realize that I'm boiling it down to like these incredibly outdated ideas, but like sometimes I wonder if that's where it comes from. If like deeply seated somewhere in your genetic code is this attraction to the hunter type, you know, the one that's going to go out and kill and skin the wild animal for you. Because I can't imagine it coming from anywhere else, honestly.
We look at, so it's many different angles, but in season two, we focus primarily on that figure of the, you know, white trash or chav or bogan. And, you know, we look at the religious circuitry we have in our headspace, because we do believe that there's a religious circuitry, like the Father Almighty, the superior, I want to worship you. This language, which, you know, you see on dating apps, like I get messages from guys saying, please let me worship you. It's all religious. And that's fine. There's like a sort of bio circuitry there. But with the dominant figure that we're talking about, that sort of alpha male, there's a sort of unconflicted state that they present. So for me, experientially, I have lots of thoughts and doubts, and there's shame, and there's a conflict, so many different opinions, and it's stressful. And when I see a chav, I think, wow, they're not emotional. They just do what they want to do. They don't have to think too much. And that's something, and that they present a sense of security. And then I want to belong to that security. I want them to take care of me and that's just make the decision.
Fascinating. Because like when I think of like, because you're right, you kind of go for that kind of guy because they seem emotionally unavailable entirely. And then you're like, oh, I can be safe there. Wait a minute. How is that safe if they're totally emotionally unavailable? It means they're never going to give a damn about you.
It relates to that phrase where it's like, you know, the burden of intelligence is like the more intelligent you are, the more unhappy you are, because you're aware of so many more things, so many more injustices, so it weighs more in your spirit. Arguably, the quote-unquote simpler man is far happier because he has far less to worry about. So it's quite interesting that you say that. Oh, that's actually
because great. Like one session I was a footstool for a guy, and that was an object. And that was so meditative because I knew I was around someone who knew what was right, quote, they knew what they wanted. And I just want a footstool. So I became an object. And that means I didn't have to think anymore. I was in the right place, doing the right thing, protected by the right person. And when I say protected, I wasn't looking for like a parental hug of I protect you and take care of you. Just kind of protected as in I'm part of his territory. You know, I'm part of his framework. So that's the kind of state that I find myself really attracted to, because I feel like there's intelligence is a burden in some ways. I just want to stop thinking for a bit, you know. That's at least one part. In season three, we look at shame and defectiveness, and we go into, is there internalized homophobia or internalized masculinity problems, because straight men also love to be degraded and humiliated. So is there shame and defectiveness which leads us to seek dominant? And also dominance suffers shame as well. We explore that because Indy's a dominant. She explores what's the shame behind dominance and why do they seek submissives? What are they actually trying to do?
I also love that you brought up the I guess, religious connection there when you said that people will message you and say, I want to worship you, because one of my favorite things in the world to do is to worship a big belly. Like, I can do that for hours. And that really becomes like, I don't want to say it's a religious experience for me, but it kind of is. I mean, to have that in my face and be able to explore and play, caress, kiss, touch every single part of it and solicit the reaction out of the person I'm doing it to is like, I don't have to touch myself in order to enjoy that. And there's many times I haven't. It's just been me with my face deep in their gut, and it is kind of transcendent for me. So I'd never considered that before. Okay. So thank you for bringing that up.
Interesting. I'm now pondering this. Like, sorry, this is not derailing the conversation at all. You just got us thinking, bitch. Well done. Goddamn. Okay. So now I'm thinking, when I have any kind of tactile moment, right, whether it's with my partner or in sex with bodies, even with a friend, right, like if we're sitting next to each other and there's a little bump or a little any kind of tactile moment, it's interesting that there is, when I reflect on it, this almost meditative element to it where I'm thinking like, oh, I'm just having cuddles right now, I could go to sleep, I could feel enwrapped by this person because I'm having this kind of, everything else outside of this is no longer. And similarly, when I am having sex with a very large person and it is about bodies, or anyone really, it could be a smaller person as well, you know, there's certainly this enamorment with body and with, you know, I don't know how to express it, but I think that religious iconography is very interesting, because when you reflect that a lot of people in our culture identify as atheists, something that we're cognizant of is that atheism is still a variation of religion, because zero is still a number, right? So even though you don't
absolutely
believe
in religion,
that is still your religious identity. But it's interesting because when you think about like American gods, who are the new gods of the world, like capitalism, TV, performance, that almost this sexual connection is like a spiritual moment. And maybe that's a way that we're all manifest. Oh, God, that's got me thinking. Sorry, I'm going to have to stop now because I'm just going to ramble about this forever. I'm going to be chewing over this, by the way, over the next week. I will message you about this just to be like, you may be
no problem.
I have thoughts. But
I mean, I would recommend listening to Michael Macro's episode in season 4, because we looked at, right at the end, Indy and I do an analysis. Once they hang up, we do an analysis and we present that. And we look into the symbolism of the largest man walking the earth and eating whatever he wants, and then eating Michael, eating him, and what it means for him to be in his belly, because he loves the big bellies as well. What does that actually symbolize for him, or in general? So we look into that. And then in season 2, the first few episodes is all about religion. And we get so scared about religion, but it's we don't have better words, but do we need better words? You know, it's... I will say with big bellies is that in Buddhism you do see variations of the Buddha with the big belly. You know, he's presented a big belly laughing, and that was worshipped because the size was something about prosperity, affluence, joyfulness, enlightenment even. That was the way it was represented. So that worship of someone whose big belly is someone who's in is amongst the rivers of the world, in that sense.
I think we talked about this on our spirituality episode in season 1, but you know, there are others, of course, that come to mind. You know, Bacchus, of course, the god of wine and good parties, basically. And then that's, of course, we have Bacchanalian and everything else that comes from that. So that's a really interesting deviation to kind of think of. But to bring it back around to BDSM Reimagined for a second here, I'm curious, do you guys ever encounter challenges with production?
In terms of making the podcast itself?
Yeah, so it's like, do you ever find that there's issues with tech, with sourcing guests, with timelines, with production and marketing? Just more from like the actual behind the scenes aspect of things. Have you run into many production problems?
Absolutely. In fact, before this recording, about 4 or 5 hours ago, we had to re-record the last episode of season four because her microphone faltered at the last moment when she was talking about gender identity of all things, and that's quite important. So to re-record that, and of course all the sound is different, and there's just unexpected things with microphones, and we've tried so many different microphones. Oh gosh, it's been a bit of a nightmare. It's been a journey, but I don't think I did have a vision of wanting to have the perfect episode. No breaths, no ums, no likes. And then I let go of that quite a bit. And how we envision it in terms of marketing as well is we're just very happy with this product floating in space for someone to stumble upon. We did have a Twitter, a YouTube, and an Instagram, but that got no traction. So we got rid of Twitter and YouTube, and then our Instagram was banned. So now we don't have, and we had a website as well, which didn't get any traction. And we didn't want to recreate all that. So now we're just there, but we're happy with the numbers. Like, that's it. We don't want to, it's a passion project. It's not to make any money or anything like that. So we're just very happy for it to float. Yeah.
Totally get that. We have an Instagram that we have for season one. We put the mockers on it for season two because we were just like, can't be bothered. Let's move to TikTok and see what happens. There's some engagement on TikTok, which is great. Brought the Instagram back for season three just because that seems to be where a lot of people know us from. And it's Instagram and all the typical metas have it, you know, integration, sharing is so much easier. But I mean, I totally get it. Like, things can oftentimes grow organically, and really, at the end of the day, what is the purpose and premise? Is it to become the biggest and the best? I don't think that's really the goal. And I don't think it should be, because if that becomes the focus, like, you losing focus on the thing that you're talking about. And what we're talking about is so core, so crucial, so critical that not enough people are talking about. So I totally see where you're coming from. We do have a listener question, which is, what is the most important thing you've learned from doing the show?
Wow. The most important thing I've learned is to find a place where you can embrace what you're into and aroused by. Find a way to really embrace it. Don't pathologize. Don't try and get rid of it or find a secret wound or something. You know, investigate as much as you can, but find a way to embrace it, not get rid of it. I think that's so crucial. As you said before, it's so hardwired. It's just, it's like trying to, it's why conversion therapy doesn't work. Gay therapy doesn't work. It's just so hardwired. Like, why would you put yourself through that shame and destructive pathway? You're wasting years. Just, you know, do whatever you need to do in a consensual way. That's it.
I want to ask a question here. Because you all are called BDSM Reimagined, what is the part of BDSM that you like to reimagine the most?
I think it's how we think and reapproach kink and BDSM. Because so much of my struggle, part of the reason it was made as well, was my struggle was I would come onto podcasts, and a lot of podcasts presented the final product, not the journey there. So there would be like the top 10 things to being kink positive, embrace this. And it came from a very completed, processed place of positivity, you know. I don't know if I can say this, but it was kind of like too positive. It was like, oh, wow. But I really struggled to be there. I didn't know how to get to that place other than simplified versions. So the Reimagined was more about, let's take you through the journey of kink and how we come to accept it in the process. So you can watch us coming to accept it. And we're going to do it by looking at, in season one, it was symbolism, like looking at our own, my fetishes, her fetishes, and what are the symbolically, let's think about the kink in terms of symbolism. Season two, let's look about archetypes and religion. Season three, let's look at it through shame and go through that, rethink it through those lenses, which it has been done before. You know, it has been done in literature, et cetera, in academic text. Not much, actually. You don't see much academic writing on these subjects, but we wanted to just share the process as we went through it.
No, that makes perfect sense. And yeah, I think this also reflects something that we see in the gaining community. A lot of the time there are people who they can gain 50, 60 kilos in a year. Like, and obviously many of us, how the fuck do you do that? How do you manage that? And usually because they have the right combination of genetics and lifestyle circumstances that permit that, they just go, oh, well, I just don't eat anymore. It's not that hard. And it's like that doesn't help, because it's easy to kind of talk about things from the angle of you've reached the end of the journey, or you had it easy, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for the people who want to be there but who aren't there, it's like sometimes you just need a little nudge. Sometimes a little something in that direction will help.
They also never seem to draw any parallels between, like, you know, like that situation that you're setting up, James, is like the same kind of situation that people come from when they're in a repressed household or they come from a repressed religion. It's like, you know, they have to be perfect all the damn time. And then when they screw up is usually when they get banished or they get reprimanded or whatever. And then they take that and then they translate it into like their social life too. It's like, can't you see the correlation here? Like, did you enjoy it when you felt morally incorrect, when someone was trying to tell you that there was something wrong with you? No, you didn't like it. So why are you now translating it to the people outside of that?
I love that thinking. I think we try to be brutally honest with our experience. I mean, in season one, I talk about my own internalized homophobia, where I went on Tinder, and I pretended to be a female, and then trying to find straight men to worship. And that was the part of the exploration. It was incredibly vulnerable to expose that to the public. And this is what I'm doing. And why am I doing this? And, oh no, I have a podcast presenter who is worshiping straight men in this period of his time. I could easily hide that, but that's part of the journey. And you get people like, you know, the power of now, where it's like, just be in the moment. It's like, what is that? That's not very, I get it. It's not helpful though. I want to know the struggle, what you mean by that. So we really try and talk through, in season three, we talk through all of our relationship history and family and the difficulty that happened and why that then could have created submissiveness, dominance, all that kind of stuff. I'm very honest.
I think that's wonderful. And I think ultimately that's got to be the cornerstone of anything that tries to talk about these things that are ultimately kept in the dark. And I said this before, when you bring it into the light, you can only accept it for what it is. You cannot misconstrue it. And when you see it in its totality, you begin to gain a better appreciation for what it is and how it relates to you, right? So I think that's fantastic that you do that. And having listened to a couple of episodes now myself, I think it's a really fantastic program. And I, again, want to take this moment to encourage people, listen to the show. Obviously, we'll do comms at the end as we normally do, but it's a fantastic thing. And I really want you to know that it's seen, and this is a moment for you to know that it's a fantastic product and you've done a great job. So thumbs up. It's fantastic.
Thank you so much. And also to you too as well. I think the King journey can be so isolating and so lonely. And with your particular fetish, I think that as well is not seen enough. And the fact that you've dedicated a whole show to this and everything around it is just so important. It's very important because you are speaking to a demographic which is in the shadow of a shadow of a shadow almost. And that is like, you know, yeah, it's a beautiful thing that you're doing and we're all doing, you know, which we're trying to get into the light more.
Fantastic. Well, listen, as a final question, what do you want listeners to take away from today's conversation?
I think I'm going to come back to, you know, try and find a way that you can connect with and embrace your fetish and kink. I just think that's the goal. Try and find a way. Yeah.
Awesome stuff. Well, that's a fantastic ending to our day today. Michael, thank you so much for being here. Now, I know you've mentioned that there were platforms that are now no longer. So for the sake of anyone who might be interested in reaching out, where can they connect with either yourself or Indie or the podcast?
Yeah, so yeah, all our platforms are down at the moment and probably will be for a little while. So you can email us on bdsmreimagined@gmail.com or just on any podcasting platform, just BDSM Reimagined. And it's a fluoro yellow background, so you should be able to see it.
Yeah, it really pops off the page. But that's it for now here on Thick Radio. Thank you all for listening. Please remember to like and subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and leave us a good review. If you liked this episode, the podcast, or just us in general, share it with your friends and encourage them to tune in. You can find me on Instagram, Beefy Frat, and Stuffin' Show at Stanham.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, and Beefy Frat at Thicky Mouse. You can also look us up on Instagram and TikTok at Thick Radio or at our website at www.podpage.com/thickradio. If you want to submit a voice note, you can find the link in the show notes. And if you have any questions or ideas for episodes, you can reach us at thethickradio@gmail.com. So until next time, bye, fats.
Bye, fats.
Bye, fats.
Let's talk about it.
Thick Radio is a Patreon and Anchor app podcast produced by Stan and Thicky Mouse.
Mixed and mastered by Stan.
Our artwork is provided by Lokitu.
Our theme song is provided by Bonify Cream.